is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 590. We're 10 to 600, folks. My name is Lisa Sheps, and my coffee-drinking co-host is Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We're streaming live at KOOP, and during COVID, as we always are, we are pre-recorded. Stay with us.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Sometimes a loser can win.
It is Wednesday, November 11th, 2020. I think it's Veterans Day. And Joe Biden is a veteran, I think, maybe. But he is also our president-elect. On the show today, we have Bernadette Nason talking about her new book. And Nicole and I will talk about the world of theater in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Tyler, Texas. We'll be right back after this song.
I've been going through the motions.
You know, that song wasn't...
like Laverne and Shirley going on there. Today, in Texas.
That's, yeah, a little Laverne and Shirley. So that song, of course, was from Rocky Das Musical.
We love the Rocky Das Musical.
We do. So this is our theme for music today. It's going to be mostly a music show today. Sometimes a loser can win. So I have to tell you, the reason why I chose that, and before I start anything else on this show, I need to say that the opinions expressed on Offstage and On the Air are not those, not necessarily those of Co-op, the board of directors, or staff. They are simply our own opinion. So, you know... As a kind of a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, I've always kind of been feeling like a loser the past few years. And now, and even at the beginning of at Tuesday night, we didn't feel so good when we went to sleep on Tuesday night. It didn't look so good for Democrats, or certainly not as good as we thought it was going to be. And everybody was really scared, but we won.
I'll feel a lot better once it's actually official and done with, and I'm not counting anything until then, because as we've seen in 2020,
things change.
It's a roller coaster.
And I guess we should say that we are recording this on Monday morning.
So anything could have happened.
You are hearing this on Wednesday, so you could be yelling at the radio right now saying, Lisa, what are you talking about? Jill Although Stein is our new president.
I had to laugh last Wednesday when our show was airing. And I was giggling, listening, and I'm like, we're letting the listeners know they knew more than we did. And I'm like, apparently they don't.
No, apparently they don't. So there are some things that I do want to talk about. But again, I did say that. Sometimes a loser can win from a Rocky Das Musical. And winning is our musical theme today.
Yes, so I've had Eye of the Tiger in my head for a few days now, so it seems fitting you would play Rocky Das Musical.
There you go, Eye of the Tiger. That was good. And you had musical accompaniment that you didn't even know. So in the New York Times, the failing New York Times, there was a couple of articles that I thought was interesting. And one of them was Hollywood Loves Broadway. And talking about, did you see that?
I did see that. That was, it came out the end of last week, right?
I think it did.
That this
yes.
article? Yeah.
Yep. It came out on November 4th. So Tuesday. So
we actually had a I didn't read it until a day or two later. Wonder why?
Exactly. So they just said that the headline was Hamilton was just beginning. Hollywood loves Broadway again. And they just started talking about things. It just made me think about the life cycle of Broadway and Hollywood. And for the longest time early on,
it was everywhere.
Musicals and Broadway shows were turned into films. And now it has gone the other. Then it went the other way, and it's well. Kind of, one would argue it's still going the other way. And
well, there was an
now,
age when the fabric of musicals were Hollywood.
Yes,
and then
absolutely.
Stopped and then came back. Like it's
kind of coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah. So in that fabric of Broadway and Hollywood, that was also like the popular songs of the day were usually Broadway show tunes, mm-hmm. And the what are now called standards. But coming out or have recently come out, this is just this list of Broadway-based shows that are coming out or have come out on film. Of course, Hamilton, An American Utopia, The Boys in the Band, What the Constitution Means to Me, The Prom, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Wild Mountain Time, West Side Story, In the Heights, Diana the Musical, Dear Evan Hansen, 13, and Wicked. Although, you know, they've been talking about Wicked for so long.
I know. I'd
be very surprised if that actually happens.
Well, what's the other one that they're working on forever? Isn't it another version of Gypsy?
I don't know.
Barbra Streisand? I think so. I think it's that Barbra Streisand Gypsy that's been like 10 years happening, not...
But I find this very interesting, and I'm looking forward to Wild Mountain Time, which comes out in December, based on Outside Mullingar, which I never saw. And
do you know what platform that'll be on?
Yes, I probably do. No, it doesn't say. It says it's going to arrive in theaters and on demand December 11th.
Interesting. Okay.
So we don't know what it was. So this was an interesting thing. In the 1960s, only 5% of new Broadway musicals were based on films. In the 2010s, it had gone to 41%.
Wow.
Yeah, and they talk about...
Well, I mean, you just played Rocky Das Musical.
I did, didn't I?
Yes.
I did.
I mean, if that doesn't prove... I mean, that proves your theory right there.
But I will say once
again. And
he met
his wife in Legally Blonde, the musical.
Yes, he did.
So I mean, there's another.
And by he, we're talking about Andy Carl. And his wife. One word name.
Ortiz.
Oh my God!
I can see her.
Or Faye.
Thank you for getting that correctly. We were on the right track.
Yeah, we got it eventually. I'm not the smartest tool in the shed.
No, but no notes. That was pretty impressive.
No, I'm three hamburgers short of a McDonald's Happy Meal. So I think it's very interesting about what's going on. But then there's another article that came out on same day. From Stage to Screen, 5 shows that got it right and 5 that didn't. So these are... These are New York Times critics talking about what they think got right. So here are the ones that got it right. And so let's see how
we agree.
About it.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, the ones that I thought that they got right recently, they didn't put in here at all. And many of them I hadn't seen and wasn't even aware of. So
you know what I just thought of? I guess you could argue King Kong is another one.
Yeah, you could. okay. Thank you for pointing that out. So getting it right, how to succeed in business without really trying.
They said
they got that right. That's a wonderful movie with Bobby Morris. Mm-hmm. And then in 2000.
And Michelle Lee.
Okay, there you go. In 2000, Hamlet, which I'm not aware of, a 2000 version of Hamlet.
No, I can't.
It's with Ethan Hawke.
Was it a musical?
No, it's not a musical. These aren't necessarily musical. Hamlet the musical.
Oh,
there
okay.
is I'm Hamlet like, the musical. I think.
I was like, I don't remember Ethan Hawke in musical. Yes, I do.
No, these
remember.
Aren't musicals.
Yeah, I remember Ethan Hawke being in Hamlet. Yes.
Okay. And then this is one I hadn't heard of either on stage or in the film. Jack Goes Boating, with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, me neither. But I'm gonna. These are. This is gonna be some of the things that I. Want to write about. And then there was a Josh Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. And then here's another one I did not know about. Passover, Spike Lee.
I don't know that one. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, yes. Yeah, you're just Spike Lee?
Yeah, this is a story of Moses, which was played by John Michael Hill, and Kitsch, Julian Parker, two spirited young black men whose lives are threatened and dreams constrained by police violence. So
yes, I didn't see it, but I know of it.
So those are the 5 that got it right. I would add, and I think you and I disagree on this. I liked the Chicago musical. I thought they got
the movie.
Right. Yeah.
No. Yeah, I know did you not like get it. That right.
Well, and we can agree to disagree.
Yeah, totally.
Which I thought they got it very right. And I know you most of your issues is with casting. I'm not really talking about casting at all. I'm just talking about how it was done.
Well, it was Rob Marshall, who's Kander and Ebb's protege. So you would think he would get it right.
I still like
but.
Yeah. So getting it wrong, the unsinkable Molly Brown. And most of the things that they say that went wrong with this was they passed over Tammy Grimes, who did it on Broadway, for Debbie Reynolds. And I did not know this. Before Debbie Reynolds, they were talking to Shirley MacLaine, who probably would have been a better choice.
I was about to say, how great would Shirley MacLaine have been, right? I mean, I like Debbie Reynolds. I don't have an issue with it.
But yeah, but for that show, I think it needed something with somebody with a little bit more of an edge. She had to make up her edge.
Yes. Yes, she did.
And the film itself wasn't very good. And it's like it would like most of the musical numbers were towards the front and then it just died.
I haven't seen it in so long that it's probably one I'd put on and be like, no, thank you. I can't get through it.
So they say the movie turned a lightweight, tuneful musical into a garish, galumping on-screen mess.
How did it really feel?
And then they got A Little Night Music wrong, which I think I agree as well.
Yeah. I don't Elizabeth... think a lot of people get that right, and it's such a good musical.
Yeah, it's a hard one, though.
It is a hard one. You have to have the right...
Seeing a bad production of A Little Night Music is just awful.
You have to have the right cast and the right production team. It has to be magic. I agree.
And Elizabeth Taylor played the lead role.
Oh, I forgot about that.
They also got Carnage wrong from God of Carnage.
Mm-hmm.
Based on a Roman Polanski. And this one made me feel good because I have not seen the play August Osage County, but I could not watch the movie.
Yeah, you said you couldn't watch the movie.
Could not watch it. And maybe the play is better than the movie because they said they got it wrong. And finally, one I hadn't heard of, Una, in 2017.
Mm-hmm. I think they're missing Little Shop of Horrors.
Agree. In which column?
That got it right.
Yes, totally agree.
And I think they're missing Mean Girls. They got it right.
There's not a movie version of the Mean Girls musical.
Oh, so you're saying it has to be the movie to the musical to the movie?
No, it's from stage to screen.
From stage, okay,
yeah,
got it. So but they are making a Mean Girls movie of the musical,
well,
FYI.
We'll have to see.
So then I'll go back. But Little Shop, I think they did Little Shop right.
Totally agree. And they didn't, what wasn't in here are like captured pieces. You know, things that you're capturing like She Loves Me and Hamilton, which were captured on stage.
Right.
What the Constitution means to me, etc. So let's take a little music break. What?
I'm surprised Into the Woods wasn't in there on either list.
Oh, yeah. So what do you think? Did they get that right or wrong? I know what most people thought. What did you think?
I'm torn on that, but I'm not as torn like Chicago torn, which you think I would be and have a strong opinion. I didn't dislike it.
Yeah, I think they kind of got it right.
I think they kind of got it right, although it wasn't like my choice on stuff. I think they overall got it right.
Kind of got it wrong, Les Miserables.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know.
I personally did not hate it.
I didn't hate it. I saw it with you.
I thought that they chose the wrong person for Javert, but, you know, that's a terrible role anyway.
I was about to say, I don't think they chose the wrong person. I just think it's a terribly written role. Poor Russell Crowe got the shaft on that one.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm making a face that people can't see.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break from the musical Let It Ride is The Flutterby Win.
The Flutterby Win?
If Flutterby wins. Excuse me. Here it is. Let's listen.
If Flutterby wins, I will buy a new home for my mother.
Okay, that was If Flutterby Wins and Let It Ride. I have some information about Let It Ride.
I don't know the song. I don't know this musical.
I didn't either. So this is based on Three Men on a Horse, by George
Well,
that's Abbott.
That's exactly where I was thinking.
And John Cecil Holm. It played, it opened on my birthday. Oh, no, sorry, 10 days after my birthday in 1961. It played for 69 performances. And it stars George Gobel and Sam Levine, and also had Barbara Nichols and Paula Stewart. So interesting.
That, yeah, I love when you pull little musicals out that I'm like, what are you, what, huh?
And the picture on the playbill shows the two leads in, looks like a tap dance pose. So I guess there's some tap dancing in it.
I'm making tap dance poses on Zoom right now.
Yeah. Speaking of tap dances and apropos of nothing, there was a piece on TV that I watched last night or the night before on Dick Van Dyke talking about his life.
Yeah.
He had no training in singing or dancing. And he was brought into Bye Bye Birdie, was his first musical ever. No training in either things. And then he just picked up all that stuff.
You know why? You either got it or you don't.
Tell you what, he certainly had the accent in Mary Poppins.
I was like, he knew how to be Mary Poppins and do a little bit.
He sure did.
We haven't had Step in Time in a while.
No, we haven't. So let's talk about a couple of other things before we take a break for our next half hour. So there's a couple of new musicals out there that I think are kind of interesting. Tell me more. One stars Kristen Bell and Jonathan Groff. I'm getting a little Groff sauce.
I love Kristen Bell. I love her.
Me too. This is a musical called Molly and the Moon. Have you heard of this yet?
No. And actually, I have to, for a minute with Kristen Bell, Reefer Madness musical into the movie of the musical was really actually good too. I know it was a movie that they made to a musical, and then the musical they filmed again afterwards, and I enjoyed that a lot. So,
all right, okay. I don't know if I've seen the filmed version.
Oh, Anna Geister is everything in it. Everything.
I believe her name is pronounced Gasnier.
Gasnier.
I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. Anna, I'm sorry if I have your last name wrong, but you're brilliant in it.
So, can we move on?
Yes, the man.
Miss Non Sequitur.
Over the Moon?
No, it's called Molly and the Moon. And it's kind of a weird... I'm just going to read the
blurb.
The little blurb. Bell and Groff, this is an article from Playbill.com. Bell and Groff play an expectant couple who sing to their unborn child. Okay, so far, so good.
So far, I get it, yeah.
And here's where it dives into. The film also takes viewers inside the womb as the unborn girl utilizes her parents' voice to reach the moon, which is birth. The film is inspired by Bayes and his wife's experience with their own newborn who had a genetic condition that required surgery. And the Bayes he's speaking of is... one of the writers, so it's the directors, Craig Thomas and Carter Bayes. They were the creators of How I Met Your Mother.
I'm like, why do I know those names? Now I get it. Okay.
So it sounds a little wacky, if you ask me. So one of the podcasts I listened to this morning,
it's very kind of like Free to Be You and Me meets Internal meets like... Yeah,
I agree. So here, I do not agree with this, but one of the podcasts I listen to like totally thinks this is going to be a right to lifers thing.
Why does everything have to be
a tone of
some sort or the other? Isn't art supposed to be what you take from it and start conversations?
So the Daily Beast has an article called How Deaf Broadway is Making Musical Theater Loud and Clear. Did you see that article?
Yes. You see me getting excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited you brought this up.
So this article talks about this new company called Deaf Broadway. And it was brought about by a gentleman named Garrett Zurker. I don't know that. He was going to have a Zoom party to watch Sweeney Todd. And so Sweeney Todd was recorded, and then they had subtitles. Well, the subtitles didn't make it. So none of the deaf people could understand what it was really saying, because American English is very different from American Sign Language. So he started this group where they would do side-by-side musicals. And the latest one is the Rocky Horror Show. When you look at it, and there'll be a link in offstageandontheair.com so that you can click to this link and see it. It shows the musical, and it's completely silent because all the actors are deaf and they're doing it with sign language. But they say to take it side by side on your screen with a particular version. And I just think it's amazing.
I think it's so cool.
And we have some local connections to this. So the company members, this is a national group, but two company members are local Austin people. One is Brian Cheslick, who is the artistic director of Deaf Austin Theater. Mm-hmm. And the other is Sandra Mae Frank, who people will know nationally as playing Vendela in Deaf West's production of Spring Awakening, and playing in two different shows for Ground Floor Theater, both Fun Home and Next to Normal. So,
yeah. And she's on the TV. She was just in the Zoes and has a few films coming out.
Right, and she's in a film that's coming out. Do you want to give the name of that film?
Oh, yeah. It's at the Other Worlds Film Festival. She does a lot of sci-fi films. That kind of surprised me that Sandra does as many. And hold on, it stars Marlee Matlin, isn't it, also?
Yep.
And hold on, the name...
Don't worry about it. Just give. Go by your memory.
Entangled.
It's called Entangled. Yay.
It'll be screening at the Other Worlds Film Festival with Austin in December.
So check out the link at offstageonair.com and read this article. It's really amazing. I talked to Brian quite often, Brian Cheslick, and I had no idea he was involved.
Yeah, I was about to always see him and see him doing stuff, and that's just so exciting.
Yeah. So with that, you might also want to check out Deaf Austin Theater. They've been doing a lot of stuff. They have a lot of things online right now, deafaustintheater.org. It's really an incredible amount of work that they're doing, and it's a theater discipline that we need to support, those of us who are not ASL functioning. But
ASL functioning. I don't speak it. I don't understand it. I'm not deaf, but I can watch a show and enjoy it just like I can any other show. It's just as powerful, and performances are just as amazing.
Me too. And I am very honored to have been given a deaf name. So, not a deaf name. An honor to be given an ASL name. And it's this. For those of you seeing, it's the letter L over my heart.
Heart, yeah. That's really cool.
So that's so if you want to talk to me in ASL and you want to use my name, you just do that.
Well, I may have to come into Zoom like that now.
Yeah, cool. Let's listen to a piece of music from The Lookout.
Why do I not know this musical?
This is called When in Wichita, and The Lookout, The Lockout. I can't read today. So this was a musical that was done in Chicago by American Theater Company, and it was presented by 6 Hours Short Productions about the NBA lockout in 2011.
I was like, that was a couple of years ago. Interesting.
And this follows the budding bromance of an owner and player who find themselves on opposite sides of a bitter labor dispute. It's written by Ben Fort and Jason Gallagher. And that's it. So let's listen to what I say the song was I was going to play. In Wichita from The Lockout.
New York has the spotlight. Los Angeles.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with who?
Lisa and Nicole.
Lisa and Nicole, the Broadway vaudeville company from way back when.
Who knew there was a musical on the basketball lockout?
Well, you know, there's a lot of, and I've been telling you this for years, that there's a lot of stuff sports? Between sports and theater. You should listen to me.
I think there's a lot of similarities between sports and theater.
Okay,
you
so know you know
you're
what
I'm going to get me going.
I know. So that's why I'm going to stop you. I forgot that when we talked about the Molly and the Moon musical, I was going to talk about a couple of musicals because there's another one to talk about that's coming in the UK, and it is called The Osmonds.
Oh, I did see this.
And it's going to open in the new Wimbledon Theater in 2021 in the summer, in August of 2021. And it features a book by Sean Carrison and Julian Bigg. And it follows, it's from a story from Jay Osmond. So, and choreography will be by Bill Diemer. Did you like the Osmonds when they were out?
The TV show back in the day?
No, prior to the TV show, the Osmond Brothers. It was a boy band, for want of a better thing.
Yeah. I guess when you're a kid, you like all that stuff.
Well, some of the songs that they mention, I don't remember any of them except for one. So here's a list of songs. Tell me how many you remember. Love Me for a Reason, Crazy Horses, Let Me In, Puppy Love, One Bad Apple, Long-Haired Lover from Liverpool, and Paper Roses. Do you remember any of those?
Puppy Love.
Oh, I don't remember, but I remember One Bad Apple.
And One
Bad Apple. One
Bad Apple,
don't spoil the whole bunch, girl. Woo!
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
And then there was the Donnie and Marie show, which I liked.
I loved that show. But know what? I loved, I was all into the Cher show and the Barbara Mandrell show and the Donnie and I just loved all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I miss variety shows a lot. And
yeah,
they were one of the last.
They were just great.
So in the late 80s, early 90s, there were two tours of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat that went out, and one of them starred Donny Osmond, and the other starred, and I started to look it up, I can't remember, the other starred some soap opera star, I can't remember his name.
Michael Damian.
That's right, Michael Damian. And they were out at the same time, and everybody just, my friend Sarah
Mott. He played Danny Romolotti on The Young and the Restless.
There you go, I knew you would know it. My girlfriend Sarah Miles was in that production, so I saw it many, many times, which I did not like.
Interestingly enough, they wrote, even though it was him as Michael, his real life person, Michael Damon, they wrote the character Danny Romolotti being in Joseph, and that's why he had to leave the show, but they did it as the character, and they had people from the cast, and they did numbers on the show. It was
cool.
Which was very different at that time,
Anyway, it was, in my opinion, not a great production. But at the same time, the Donny Osmond tour that was going around was supposedly amazing. And then
I have friends that saw it and loved him in it. Loved
everybody,
him in it.
Everybody I know. But now they also, and it was just re-released a few months ago, the film version with Donny Osmond, which was absolutely horrendous.
Didn't see it. I don't like Joseph.
I do. I do. But that is particularly bad. I like it. It just has a lot of memories for me. Now it is time for Today in Theater History.
Dun, dun, dun. And
but
I'm
it's
just
not...
going to, I'm
Go
picking
ahead.
A bone with Andy Cohen, trying to take our Today in Theater History and turn it into Bravo History.
Okay,
Stinker.
Well, okay, it's
I'm
ours.
On to you.
Which we stole from Playbill. So there you go. So Today in Theater History, for Saturday, November 7th, the day the election was called. Apropos of the election, in 1904, Give My Regards to Broadway was first sung on Broadway stage to the opening of George M. Cohan's Little Johnny Jones at the Liberty Theater. Give my regards to Broadway. My father used to sing it. He would go, Herald Square. Hey, ya, Herald. That's what my father always said. Hey, Herald.
I used to live like a block from Herald Square.
And then in 1934, Tallulah Bankhead starred in Dark Victory, one of the great weepers on Broadway, they say.
The great weepers.
There was a film version in 1939 starring Betty Davis.
Oh, there was, wasn't there?
Yeah. And then in 1956, Long Day's Journey into Night opened at the Helen Hayes.
Boy, that's a beast of a...
That was against, and we've talked about this on the show, Eugene O'Neill was against its opening. He had since passed. He had passed before this, but he was against it. It starred Jason Robards Jr., Frederick March, and Florence Eldridge, and it was directed by Jose Quintero. I just love Long Day's Journey into Night.
Love it.
It's a very, yeah. And then in 1971, David Rabe's Sticks and Bones opened at the Public. And that was about a traumatized Vietnam vet who returns home to his all-American family.
What is that? Why do I know? Do we know who was in it? Why do I feel like I know who was in it? If you don't know, I can. That's fine. I can look it up.
Well, I can just tell you if you stop talking. It's Santo Loquasto starred in it.
Hmm.
When it got to Broadway. So that was, but it doesn't say who was in it. In the Public, which is off-Broadway. So here's something interesting. Here, I'll give you a little test. So the Sandyland Diaries opened on this day. It was first done at the Atlantic Theater Company. Can you guess the year?
Oh, God. It's almost 30 years old.
So, and so your guess is?
Because it was first done on NPR as a piece before he did it into a piece on stage.
So your guess is?
89 96 90? Oh, so it wasn't 30 years, 25.
No, but I mean, he did the piece. It was the, you know, he did it.
I realized when he read it as a short story on NPR, it must have been the late 90s then, early 90s then.
Yeah. And then, the final thing is, and I totally forgot about this, in 2003 in London at the Victoria Palace Theater, the show is called Tonight's the Night. It's a new musical with music by Rod Stewart.
I was about to say, all I want to do is go, tonight's the night. But that's why, because it's Rod Stewart.
Hold on just a second, Nicole. I have to stop you right there.
Why?
Well, we have to interrupt our mostly music show of talking about winning and celebrating to interview someone.
Where are we going? Where should
I have
the Zoom
no
machine
idea.
Lead
We're
going
to get into the Zoom machine and see where it takes us. But I'm feeling like there might be a trip across the pond, but I'm not sure.
Let's check it out. Ready?
Let's get in.
Fire her up.
Oh, she was already running. She was idling. Couldn't you hear it? Okay, so let's open the hatch door and see where we are. Bernadette Nason.
Hello, good morning.
Oh my gosh, well, we kind of called it. We said we were going across the pond, but we're just speaking to someone who's from across the pond.
Who's actually in North Austin.
Which is across the pond.
Kind of.
I got to stop us here for just a second. I forgot to hook up my headphones, so I'm using the speakers on my computer. Therefore, both Bernadette and Nicole sound like they're coming from the bottom of a well. I apologize, but just imagine the two of them in the nicest little well you ever saw. Okay, let's go. Well, it's so good to see you. We are recording this on Sunday. And as our listeners have already found out, we learned that Joe Biden was nominated or elected. He's our president-elect. So, depending on how you vote, congratulations or condolences. Okay, I'm going to give you a little hint, Bernadette Nason. Nods do not work on radio.
I know. I am in some intermediary world between Zoom and being able to see you and the radio. And
very different.
I keep forgetting that while I'm nodding, I'm being very polite so that I'm not interrupting you, because that's Zoom behavior.
Well,
and the fact, yeah.
No, go.
Well, hooray! If you are a Biden person, and I'm so sorry if you're not.
Right.
So yes. Yes.
Well, excellent. Sunday certainly, morning. Regardless of where you sit, it is going to be a new era. There's going to be a new attitude here. But we're not here to talk politics, even though we can't help but do it. I mean, our listeners know my stand. So I am definitely pro-Biden. And we've done all the disclaimers that we need to do ahead of time so we can say whatever we want.
But, cool.
But we're not here to talk about Biden. We're here to talk about the next best things, baby Jesus.
Yes. Right.
Alas, it's stealing baby Jesus rather than supporting baby Jesus. But nevertheless, yes, my new book, Stealing Baby Jesus, a treasury of ludicrous attempts to rescue Christmas.
Yes. So tell us what you mean by that. Because, in today's day and age, rescuing Christmas can be a political issue.
And it's not a political issue. And I actually put a disclaimer at the beginning of the book saying this is entirely for entertainment. Even though there are probably people out there who think, oh, God, this is going to be a religious book. And some may buy it for that purpose. It is not. It is a book about growing up at a time when Christmas was a very difficult situation in our family, and about how our mother tried to rescue it, and how I have tried throughout my life to use my mother's methods, and how they either did or didn't work according to the circumstances of my life at the time. So shall I tell you that it begins when my sister sent me an article from the Guardian newspaper, which said that Winchester, my hometown, was vying to win the title of the most Christmassy town in Britain. And I was so flabbergasted, I thought, what? No way. Because I remembered what Christmas was like when I was a child. And I called my sister and I said, what the heck is this? And she said, I know, I haven't got a single good memory of Christmas. Mm. And that got the conversation going about memories of Christmas. And it made me realize that I've had Christmases all around the world, and some have been good and some have been bad, but there are lots of adventures there.
So can you tell our audience like one of the secrets that your mother did to try to fix Christmas?
Yes. And actually it relates to something that happened in the United States as well. We always used to bake a Christmas cake. Now, in England, everyone knows automatically what that is. It's a huge, rich fruit cake. And when I say fruit, I mean dried fruit. And most Americans at this point are probably rolling their eyes or vomiting a little in the back of their throats. But this is a tradition in England. You bake the cake in early December, and then you put lots of brandy and stuff like that in it. And then that cake will actually last
a lifetime.
The next Christmas.
Well, until Easter. Mm-hmm. So my mum had a sort of method of baking this cake, and she would sit us, when we were little kids, she would sit us in the kitchen around the washing machine, which was the table, and we would.
Well, I'm sorry to stop you, but I just wanted to acknowledge that who doesn't have their table on a washing machine?
Well, good. Thank you for saying that.
That's totally normal.
Is it?
No, not at all.
Okay, because I thought, I don't know about America. Maybe you actually did. But the kitchen was so small, you see, that Mum would just pull out the washing machine and we'd sit around it. You're mocking me.
You're not mocking me.
Well, so it was a sort of a morning's exercise or an afternoon's exercise. And we loved it as little kids. And when I say little, I mean 5, 6, that sort of age. As my brother, my sister and me. Well, we did that every year until eventually we were ghastly teenagers and my mother said, I don't want 3 of you in the kitchen at the same time. You're just horrible. Go away and do something else. And all of this is covered in the book. So when I was having a particularly bad year in Austin and I was performing in a Christmas carol at the City Theatre and my handbag got stolen, and it had everything in it. And I thought, what can I do? How can I rescue Christmas? But I will make a Christmas cake. And if I tell you that the making of the Christmas cake became a 9-hour exercise, taking me into the early hours, by which time I'd had a lot of gin, you'll know that it was a wild and extremely risky adventure. But I did end up with a cake. I didn't actually ice it, which you're supposed to do with Christmas cakes. But it's the story, the whole story of my making the cake and how badly wrong it went.
Oh, my.
I love a good Christmas cake. We have them every year with the butter brandy hard sauce. And
That's good. Oh, now that's Christmas pudding.
We do Christmas pudding and the Christmas cake, the whole nine yards.
Okay. I can't remember where you come from, Nicole.
New York and Texas, New York and Menexen.
Right. Well, because if you go to the East Coast, people do still do that. But the further west you go, the less likely it is that there's an actual Christmas cake.
You know? I'll tell you, I am one of those people that does not abhor fruitcake. but I'm hoping that in your quest that year in Christmas and in building your 9-hour Christmas cake, that some of that gin spilled over and found its way into the cake.
Well, as a matter of fact, I mentioned this, that I got to the end and I put it in the oven. And by this time, I was so plastered. I glanced over and I saw the brandy bottle and I realized I'd forgotten to put the brandy in it. And so I looked up to see what you do, because I vaguely remembered my mother doing this once. And it said that once the cake was cooked, you had to plunge holes into the cake and just pour it in. So there I am at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've just watched Alastair Sim's Christmas Carol on television. I've got a gin and tonic in one hand and a brandy bottle in the other. So I'm tipping one for the cake, one for the cook, one for the cake, one for the cook. And I've got a brandy in one hand and gin in the other. Woohoo! That was a good Christmas.
You are my kind of cake maker.
I was like, that sounds like a cake Lisa and I would like.
And actually, I did chop it up when it was, it did come out brilliantly. It stank of brandy. And I chopped it up into little pieces and I gave it to people as gifts. And very small pieces, because a lot of people, you could see their faces wrinkle as I handed it to them, you know.
Yeah, what do I do with this?
Yeah, what do I do with this? I can actually... bury it is probably like you do with sauerkraut.
So back to the book Stealing Baby Jesus, which is what we're talking about in this story, is one of them. I hear that it mixes wry comedy and pathos and points out the absurdity of everyday life.
Thank you for reading some of the blurb that I sent you. It does. Well, anyone who knows me knows that when I tell a story, there's always It tends to be funny, because that's my instinct and my British sense of humor will come through. But there's also life, as we know, goes on. And so there are a lot of sad elements to it as well. And for a lot of people, Christmas is a sad time. I don't know why it is, I can tell you why it is for myself, but it actually often makes people sad. And I sort of analyze a little bit of why there's sadness at Christmas, why in some cases we're trying to recreate things that we were brought up with instead of finding our own path. And for me, that's the journey I take, that I think if I do what my mother said, I'm going to make this a Merry Christmas. And it was only when as an adult I look back at it with my sister and we realized that we weren't really very happy then. And so what I'm doing is I'm recreating unhappy situations. So it got me thinking about how I could create Christmas for myself. And that's what I've done. And now, of course, you get to the last chapter and say, oh, well, it's every Christmas now is this wonderful, happy time. It isn't. But it comes from within you. It's what you bring to it, you know.
Wonderful. So Stealing Baby Jesus was a finalist in the Writers League of Texas 2018 Manuscript Contest, which I think is cool.
Yes.
When will it or has it come out?
Well, it comes out officially. It has its launch on Amazon on November the 17th. That is a Tuesday. I think I'm supposed to know this. Yes, it is.
It is.
Because it's 10 days from now. Yesterday. I already have some I get some author copies early.
Sure.
If you are interested in getting one from me, they can just go to my website and sent, drop me a line, and I will sign it, and I will either hand deliver it if it's Austin, or they can come to my house and collect it. And as we get closer to Christmas, I'm going to be gift wrapping as well. I'm going to do the entire service because I've got nothing else going on.
So obviously this will be available on Amazon on the 17th, and then get it from your website. Just give us the website address one more time.
It's my name, BernadetteNason.com.
Wonderful.
And I have a contact page, and you just drop me a line on my contact page and I will set things up.
Great. Wonderful. So now, are you, the last question I have for this book, and then I just want to ask you one final question before we get back in our Zoom machine, is that, are you going to have any kind of launch party via Zoom or in person or anything?
Well, this being the year of the pandemic, launch parties have become a very unlikely thing. One or two folks are trying to organize socially distanced things in their yards for me. So if anyone's interested in having a party like that for me, I'd be thrilled. But Austin Playhouse, bless them, my alma mater of theater companies, they're going to do a Zoom launch party for me on Saturday, November the 14th. And they're just asking people to let them know if they want to come along.
Wonderful. And I'm assuming they can find information about that at austinplayhouse.com.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Wonderful. Yeah, a friend of mine had a launch party for her book on Zoom, and it was really, really successful. Mm-hmm. So it was great. Well, I am thrilled. This is not your first book, though.
No, this is my second book.
Mazel tov.
The first book was Tea in Tripoli, which I had the pleasure of talking to you about in 2017.
Yep.
And that was great fun. We had lots of launch parties for that. This is not the follow-up. This is the second book, but it's not the follow-up.
Something different.
Yeah. And what could I get done during the pandemic?
There you go.
In April, I thought my life has come to an end. I began to write.
You have been much more, whatever the word is I'm trying to think of, simple word, than most people.
Industrious, productive.
Productive was what I was trying to come up with, but I didn't. So, speaking of Austin Playhouse, you are going to be performing your one-person Christmas carol through the amazing magic of the interweb for Austin Playhouse. Tell us about that briefly. We don't have a whole bunch of time.
Okay. So briefly, and bless you two for giving us the opportunity. Well, you and Patty for giving us this opportunity at Ground Floor Theater. We're going to be recording the production that we did in 2009, 2010. And it's going to be available at Austin Playhouse that weekend of the 18th through the 21st of December. I'm very excited about doing it. I haven't done that particular production. I've done versions of it all over the place, but I haven't done that particular one since 2009, 2010. So, awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited. So thank you, Laura Toner, and all the folks at Austin Playhouse.
Wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to that. And folks can get information about that, I assume, at austinplayhouse.com.
Correct. Everything they need to know will be there.
Awesome. Bernadette Nason, we're so happy that you joined us in our Zoom machine.
Yes.
We have to get back to playing music, though. But speaking of music, one thing just occurred to me that when you said that you're from Winchester. I'm assuming you like Donovan, then.
I do love Donovan, but I'm not 100% sure why I should. Well, you'd think I would know this being from Winchester, but...
Don't you hear that?
Oh, I do.
That's Winchester Cathedral.
Right, but I...
Isn't that Donovan?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry to have to correct you, but the song Winchester Cathedral is by a band called the New Vaudeville Band.
Oh, well, that's what I said.
Right.
Okay, Donovan, so New Vaudeville Band, they're the same thing.
Sure. And we weren't allowed to sing it in our house.
You were
my
not?
Mother would, we were not allowed to sing it because my mother thought it was an abhorrence of a song. She felt like it was, I mean, she would say, Winchester Cathedral? Why would Winchester Cathedral have any interest in what he's got to say? If you listen to the words, you'll
well,
understand.
Well, I hope that you looked at her and said, Bidodio Doe.
I certainly will. From the grave, I will.
All right, Bernadette, thank you so much, and best of luck with the book launch and the show.
Thank you. You too. Such a pleasure. Lovely to see you on Zoom.
Lovely to see you too. I just love that Bernadette Nason.
I love that Bernadette Nason too.
I do have to apologize to both of you for the way y'all sounded like you were at the bottom of a well. But as I mentioned, it was nice to imagine you in the most pleasant and beautifulest of wells.
That's so weird when you told me that later. I can't believe it. Sometimes.
Well, we wouldn't know.
Bernadette and I like those submarines and wells. We just hang out there a lot.
There you go. So a couple of more things, if we have time. First of all, what our audience will know and what we do not know are the winners of the B. Iden Payne Awards.
Oh, yes.
Which go on as we're recording tonight, Monday night. So somebody won.
And congratulations,
the B. Iden Payne Awards. And congratulations to all the winners.
Yeah, congratulations to all the nominees, all the winners. It's a really amazing, I know it's condensed due to the 2020 season and COVID, but it's a really hearty group of nominees. And Lisa, I know you're part of that. Hats off to you. Ground floor.
Yep. Ground floor theater's up for several. We're very nervous. And and of course, those that are listening that saw, I am presenting the Technical Theater Awards.
Dun, 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 dun.
I get to say that, and the award goes to, dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun. You getting all fancy and sparkly?
No.
Wish the video was on for our listeners when you were like, no.
Well, that's it for the show. We did it.
Again.
So it's been another week. We continually get more news on the politicians front. I will say the last political thing I need to say here is what is going to be big theater in January is the runoff election for the Senate in Georgia. Dun, 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 dun. Georgia. Georgia.
And here's my question, and I don't know, and I meant to look it up, and I got so caught up in other, I haven't. When are our runoff elections here in Austin? Because we have some runoff on council members.
Yes, we have two runoffs on council members, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I think they're
neither.
Soon. I think they're soon. So that's it. So we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye.
Bye.